The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With me this morning is Brenda Power, columnist with the Sunday Times and the Irish Daily Mail, and Don O'Brien, chief economist at the Institute of International and European Affairs and columnist with The Currency. And I'll get in a second, Dan, to address some of the numbers that emerged this week about our economic growth that put us in the outlier territory in economic terms, I would have thought, and raise exactly the kind of questions that the Commerce Secretary in the US has been pointing at. But before that, the President, Michael D. Higgins, has been critical of the UK's £1.5 billion arms investment. Now, this is part, Brenda, of a general wave of EU and European countries investing heavily in arms because of what they are seeing happening in Ukraine and what they are seeing happening in terms of the American backstop disappearing. His criticism is what?
He said basically that the UK has invested 1.5 billion in technology, I guess, that will make the British Army 10 times more lethal. I mean, it would seem to me that if you're going to invest in an army, you don't want to invest in armaments that will make it 10 times less lethal. The entire point of having weaponry, and that is the whole point ultimately of mutually assured destruction, surely, is that the more powerful your weaponry and your army is, the less likely, I guess, that you will be drawn into war. But also, you know, we can now no longer rely, it is clear, on the United States. And so Europe has to build up, I'm afraid it has to build up its capacity for defence. And this would seem to me to be a logical next step. But the President reckons that, no, we should be making our weaponry and our defence weaponry less lethal. I don't understand the logic of that. It's a bit head in the clouds, to be honest.
And the statement he made was, the Prime Minister next door, that being Keir Starmer, says, we are going to produce drones that are 10 times more lethal. Think of the morality of that statement.
What's the point of producing weapons at all then? You know, let's just fight with feather dusters, because clearly that's what the Russians are going to be doing. It's absurd. It's an absurd position. I'm sorry. And I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Anton. I'm not entirely convinced that Michael D. Higgins is as popular outside of a bubble created by RT in the Irish Times as people think he is. And a lot of people are very sceptical and very, I think, unhappy with this kind of
intervention. Is there an argument to be made that what he is trying to get at is that while lethal weapons may be an unfortunate necessity, that taking public pride in the investment in them indicates a lack of core morality? Is that what it is?
I don't know that it's pride. It's simply reassurance, I would have thought, in a very uncertain world where we've been told by Trump that the US is basically going to stay out of our battles, and he has practically, in fact, he has encouraged Russia to attack unless NATO spending is increased. So, I mean, what are we supposed to do?
The President would want to get used to it, I would think, Dan O'Brien, because this kind of investment is now, accordingly, if you look at the flows of capital across Europe, the defence and security spending is off the charts compared to what it has been for the last number of decades.
Absolutely. I work for a foreign affairs think tank, so we're, you know, in touch with people. I was in Prague just a couple of weeks ago. Since 2022, the level of discussion at European level on defence has been utterly transformed. We had a great 30-year period where security and defence was just a minor issue. Since the war in the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, the Finns, the Swedes have joined NATO. Absolutely unthinkable. In Prague, in every country.
And as we said for the Finns, it was unthinkable in Finland as well.
In Finland.
It wasn't popular.
The idea, the Swedes had been neutral since the time of Napoleon. They had never joined NATO. Countries in Central Europe are worried that they will have Russian troops rolling through their cities. That they are living with the thought that in a couple of years ahead, we could have the Russian army coming through our cities and towns. And that's what people talk about over there. Like, we are so lucky to have this sort of an island behind an island, and we are not at all plugged in to the scale of the concerns in other countries.
And is investment following those concerns? Because I hear reports of an awful lot of capital flowing into defence spending.
For example, we saw this week that one of the big German military defence companies, Rheinmetall, moved into the top 50 most valuable companies. So it's tripled in value over recent times because Europe is rearming. It's hard to get across. You know, you go to one of these central European capitals, never mind the Baltics, and there's almost a state of panic in terms of how they genuinely fear that if Ukraine falls, Putin is going to turn to other countries and we could be into all-out war in Europe. So I think that's the context of what the UK, you know, the French and the British are the two big military powers in Europe. And they, like everyone else, we're increasing defence spending. I just don't think this, you know, we seem far more interested in the conflict in the Middle East than the conflict either in Ukraine and the potential for further conflict on our own continent. And just, you know, just to put the drone thing into perspective, there's been a very busy
news week. Because the piece related specifically, Keir Starmer was saying that the 10 times multiple of lethality is specifically in relation to the investment in drones for the army.
Absolutely. And just in the context of this, I think one of the major things, and it's shaken the sort of whole military world, was what Ukraine did last weekend. Mm-hmm. It sent drone swarms to take out very important bombing capabilities of the Russian army right up next door to Norway and all the way over in Siberia, thousands of miles away. So this is a really big change in how drones are used, that they can be used at such distance and with such repercussions. So the whole drone thing is becoming, seemingly from people who are knowledgeable about military affairs, is really becoming a major deal. Let me just finish by saying, I have no idea what the president of our country is doing criticizing security and defense policy of our neighbor. That's not what he's elected to do, not what he's voted for, not what he was voted for, to do. So I again, could I echo what Brenda says? You know, I think this is ridiculous. Our president needs to do his job and not be a commentator. If he wants to be a commentator, leave the presidency, come on shows like this.
Well, exactly. That is why Michael McDougall said he does not want to run for the presidency, because he wants the freedom to be able to express opinions without breaching the constitutional limits of the job. And I mean, I think people who voted for Michael T. Higgins, I wasn't one of them, but people who did expected that he would know the limits, and he clearly doesn't.
But are the limits not that he doesn't involve himself in domestic primarily and to a lesser degree foreign policy? What he is raising is the question of morality about a statement made by a near neighbour. I would have thought the people who voted for him to give that kind of moral guidance, leadership, no?
Well, look, he's done this before, and about Eastern, Central and Eastern European countries rearming to protect themselves. These are the countries that face a real threat of being invaded. And I know, like, the lead foreign affairs writer of the Wall Street Journal picked up on it. The former president of one of the Baltics picked up on it. And, like, there was just, who does this guy think he is telling us how we should protect ourselves when he's sitting over there in an island or behind an island, totally protected? There was outrage.
In a 94-room house.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
Well, the text to say, I agree with our president, more weapons are not the answer, more dialogue is needed.
Great.
Yeah, well, if you live in the Baltics and you think you're going to be invaded next year by the Russian army, that's all fine. So people who say that sort of thing, go and live in one of the Baltics and see how you feel about whether you should avenge yourself or not.
Another, I'm 100% agreement with Brenda Power on Michael D. 53106, if you have a view at a cost of 30 cent, or 087-1400-106. What, by the way, while we're talking presidential spats, we'll be discussing this a little bit later with Scott Lucas from the Clinton Institute in UCD. What did you make of Elon Musk and Donald Trump at each other's throats?
I mean, I think as Matt Cooper describes it, wildly entertaining. And also in Andrew Neil in the Mail says it's a bit like, as Hemingway said about going bankrupt. It starts gradually and then suddenly, you know. So last weekend, Trump was giving him a golden key and saying, welcome back anytime. And, you know, 2 months ago, I think Musk says, I love this man more than I could possibly love any other, a straight man could love another man. Now they're threatening to dig up all the bodies that they both know the burial sites of, including the Epstein files. And then Musk is also suggesting, I helped him win the election. Was it rigged? We know elections have been rigged in the past, according to Donald. So was this one rigged? And then Trump is saying, here's a way we can slash the budgets. We can cut all of the
pork that's heading towards Elon.
No, exactly. All the
now,
star.
Here's the bit that I don't get in this, Brenda. Why? Surely Donald Trump, because whatever else he is, he's predatorially bright. Surely he would have known this is where it's going to end up. Therefore, don't be evidently too close to Elon Musk in public.
But
no?
You mean he has learned this already with the likes of Steve Bannon? You know, that he, I mean, we knew, everybody watching this knew this was inevitable. It probably took longer than most people expected. But, I mean, the inevitability of this meltdown, the entertainment value of it, though, I have to say, I mean, you do wonder what impact it's going to have on the rest of the world. Apparently, I think the Mail again has a piece saying, at $35 billion, this is the most expensive Twitter spat in history. Not that there's a great history of Twitter spats, but $35 billion is the estimated hit to Musk so far in terms of Tesla values, Tesla valuations. But I have a feeling it's going to get worse. Although I see a quote from Elon's father saying, I'm kind of telling him now to let it fizzle out, to calm it down a little bit. I say he might be as well be talking to the wall now.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for spats, the Errol and Elon spat is a deeper and more set in. By the way, on the topic of Tesla valuations, Dan, I know this is probably at the outer edges of stuff that you would pay attention to, but if a corporate entity can increase and decrease its value by a multiple of more than 100% every couple of months, does that mean that the valuation is a complete myth and nobody knows what the company's actually worth?
Well, I think that's a good way of putting it. A lot of it is going to be purely speculative. If a company should not move in value unless there's been some fundamental factor behind it. So, yeah, it looks very...
Because Tesla has gone from the mid-200s to 400 and back down to 200 again in 5 months?
If you compare the value of Tesla to the number of cars produced and you look at that with other companies, it's totally out of line. And so it's been way overvalued because of a view that it was the future. It probably isn't the future anymore, but let's see. But if I could just say, the things that I was sort of following this week through the noise, if I want entertainment, I watch reality TV. This is sort of the reality TV nonsense that Trump goes on with. There were two points. Derek Scally writes about it in the Irish Times, that actually something important rather than a spat between these two guys. The German president went to the White House this week. That was actually pretty good. Things looked like calming down. And Trump also had a long conversation with the Chinese president this week.
Just spinning that mic a bit down for me.
Which was the Chinese president this week, which apparently was also quite good because the... there is a risk now. We're back in the time of nuclear war. Is back in possible. It's both possible in Europe with Russia, but it's also possible with China and the US, particularly if Taiwan is invaded, and that could quickly become the real big flashpoint of the 21st century, the first half of the 21st century. That Trump and Xi had this long call that seemed to calm things down is very important because that relationship between China and the US is now the most important bilateral relationship in the world. So I think these are much more important stories. Calming down of relations with Europe, calming down of relations with China are much more important than this nonsense about
Trump. They are, but they're not as sexy, I have.
No, of course they're not. But my job is to try and see through the all the noise and the messing and what's actually important.
I'm a big fan of your tabloid M6, Brendan.
Keith Duggan has a great line in the Irish Times, comparing it to the spat between Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell in The Banshees of Inisherin, which suggests that Trump is going to turn up at the White House, cut off his fingers with a chainsaw and fling them at the door. There's also an interesting piece in the Mail about how close was Trump to Epstein. Very close seems to be the answer, actually. They quoted one biographer saying they shared girlfriends, they shared airplanes, they shared business strategy, they shared tax strategy. They were inseparable. These two men, in a very meaningful way, they created each other.
And Michael Wolff has made a couple of interesting assertions. Interesting assertions about photographs that he has seen of the two together that are intriguing. Dan, you're talking about more impactful things from the week. We had economic numbers emerging this week in relation to our own economy. Are they exactly the kind of numbers we hope America won't see because it proves the point?
Well, it's more actually the Europeans, because I got a couple of Europeans talking about it this week. So just to say, we had these really crazy economic growth numbers this week. They looked off the charts. They were off the charts.
We are the Tesla of nations.
Well, something. I think that might be a good way to contextualize it. They actually don't matter that much. What happened was that a lot of American pharmaceutical companies shipped more pharma product into the US to get ahead of the tariffs in the early part of the year. So that bumped up our growth numbers. Does it really matter in the broad scheme of things? Not at all. Okay, so it's a non-real, hard news story, but it did get picked up. And the people who picked it up are the Europeans. And the reason the Europeans picked it up is because Trump has a big issue that Europe sells more to the US than we buy, the other way around. So a big cause of that, about a third of that surplus that we have, is caused by little old Ireland. So if you look
at a third of the European surplus.
Okay. And that is because we sell so much the value of the pharmaceuticals we sell. So
One third of the total European surplus is Irish exports.
One third, okay. So some people in Europe are beginning to say, well, if we didn't have the Irish involved in this stuff, which is great for them and whatever, it would be, we'd have a much less, we could have a smaller problem with Trump. And that's what's getting picked up. So that it's less a concern from the American side, it's a more concern that the European side is saying, hey, we're having these problems with Trump and you're causing a third.
As in that they come over, wrap arms around and say, lads, you need to do something about this, you're exposing us, is that
well,
it?
Well, there's not much any country can do really to reduce the amount it exports. But the fact that Ireland is accounting for a third of this surplus that Trump is making an issue of is getting other countries to say, well, Ireland, you're causing a lot of this problem. Mm. They're not saying cut your exports, but it is another dimension to this thing that breeds resentment to some extent about American companies coming here, booking lots of profits here, and other countries sort of are envious of that and feel they're losing out to some extent.
But it does seem to have been artificially inflated, because I remember reading a month or so ago that some of the pharmaceutical exporters had increased their production by 42% in January and February to avoid the tariffs. That was bound to distort our figures by the end of the first quarter.
Well, this is the equivalent of, there were those reports of Apple filling 5 commercial jets with iPhones and just flying them into the US to get ahead of the tariff. Presumably, that's what happened. They were pumping out pills and putting them on planes.
That's exactly what happened. So it'll probably mean that we're going to have a very big negative GDP number in the second quarter. So for us, it is actually not consequential. But as I say, I've heard a number of people, Europe-based people, pick up on it and ask me about it this week.
Texts say, your guest is 100% right. Our president is putting us in the line of fire and distancing us from our nearest neighbour, whom we will rely on someday. Well, in security perspective, we rely on them quite a bit right now. 53106 at a cost of 30 cents if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. The other news on the topic of the presidency, the other news that emerged in the last couple of days is that Miriam O'Callaghan is writing the book. We're getting the memoir.
That's right. Miriam is writing a memoir, and no better woman to tell a story.
Right on the eve of the presidential election,
yes,
Brenda.
Now, I have to say that the report in the Indo suggests that the fact that this will come out just before the election undermines the suggestion that Miriam might be thinking of running. And I know she has ruled herself out a lot. But it will be an interesting timing. And, I mean, it'll sell like hotcakes, because Miriam is genuinely popular around the country. I'd love to see her run, to be honest. I think she'd be a great candidate. She's got all the qualifications, and she's a strong legal background. And I think she'd be great.
Do you believe that any of the runners and riders that are currently in the mix are actually going to be the cohort from whom our next president comes?
I would be very surprised, Anton. I recall this time in 1997 being sent by Vincent Brown to do an interview for McGill with Aidy Roach, and his exact words were, because she's going to be our next president, isn't she? That was before a little-known Northern academic threw her hat in the ring. So I would put my house on it. I don't believe that the names we're currently hearing as candidates will throw up the actual president. But maybe I'm wrong.
Brenda, thank you. Likewise, Dan, thank you very much. Dan O'Brien, Chief Economist at the Institute of International and European Affairs and columnist for The Currency. Brenda Power, columnist for The Sunday Times and Irish Daily Mail.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.